in all caps. You are in danger. I am genuinely sick of this overly dramatic bullshit. Bubbles appear on the screen to indicate that Tom is still typing, but I don't want to hear it. So before any more messages pop up on the screen, I block his number. There. Now I have nothing to worry about. Chapter 59. Gretchen starts cooking dinner when I get into their apartment. She's making some sort of casserole, which seems to involve putting basically everything from the fridge into a 9x11-inch pan and then sticking it in the oven at 400 degrees. Trust me, she says, it's delicious. I don't know how it could not be delicious given how much cheese you just put in that pan, I tease her. She winks at me. The secret to everything that tastes good is cheese. I laugh. I'm definitely feeling better since leaving Tom in front of the steps of the building. There's still a heavy feeling in the pit of my stomach, but I did the right thing. Even if Tom isn't a serial killer, he was not a good boyfriend. Like he said, he was terrified of commitment. I mean, when he met my friends, he looked like he was practically going to have a heart attack. Good riddance. While we're waiting for the casserole concoction to bake in the oven, Randy decides to take a shower, and Gretchen shows me some of the photos from her exhibit at the museum. I feel terrible that I didn't manage to make it there one more time before it closed, but she is really understanding about it. My God, Sid, she says. You've been through so much lately, and you already saw it once. It was amazing, truly. I flip through the photographs, which shows how much work Gretchen put into it. The exhibit was about flower species dating back to the Middle Ages. It's both spectacular and incredibly colorful. That's why she was at the museum the night Bonnie was killed, when she claimed she had been with Randy. But instead, he was in our apartment building, all alone. I can't help but feel uneasy about that. Okay, Randy just defended me, and I'm grateful for that. But now that Tom has a rock-solid alibi for the night of the murder, we still don't know who killed Bonnie. It wasn't Randy, though. I'm sure of it. To my amazement, the ant farm has been mounted next to the bookcase. I genuinely thought Gretchen was going to toss it out the window, the way she was talking. I can't believe you let him keep the ant farm, I say. I know. She rolls her eyes, but she's smiling. I must really love that lunkhead, huh? I can't help but feel a jab of sadness. Will I ever feel that way about anyone? It's possible someday I will, but it definitely won't be Tom. The timer goes off, which means the mystery casserole is done. Gretchen pulls it out of the oven just as Randy emerges from the shower. With his hair plastered to his skull, he looks almost painfully skinny. He flashes us a big smile. You ladies need help? Randy grabs some dishes and utensils. I carry the casserole, and Gretchen fishes out a bottle of wine from the cabinet over the refrigerator. A few minutes later, I am scooping casserole onto my plate, and when I taste it, it's not that bad. Actually, it's pretty good. Before I know it, I have demolished half a plate of casserole. This is delicious, Gretchen, Randy says happily. You're the best cook ever. She giggles. No, I'm not. I mean, it's a casserole. Yeah, but he grins at her. Somehow, you make everything taste so good. She beams. Well, I love to cook for you. Randy stares at her for a moment. He plays with his fork, pushing some of the casserole noodles around his plate. After what appears to be several seconds of internal debate, he gets out of his chair. While I watch in astonishment, he drops down onto one knee. Oh no, not right now. Not right in front of me. Please, no. Gretchen, he says, I love you so much. Her mouth is hanging open. Randy! Okay, this is happening. I really do. In fact, I don't know what I would do without you. He digs around in the pocket of his jeans until he pulls out that blue velvet box. How long has he been carrying that ring around with him, waiting for the right moment? And that's why I never want to be without you. Gretchen, will you marry me? Her eyes are shining, brimming with tears. Oh my God, yes, of course. Of course I'll marry you. Randy slides the white gold ring with the tiny diamond onto Gretchen's slender finger. And I was right. She doesn't care what size the diamond is. She's just so thrilled that he asked her to marry him. And then he helps her to her feet and kisses her. It's absolutely the sweetest thing I have ever seen. And I think I'm about to start crying. They are happy tears. Well, mostly. I'm not going to say it isn't depressing that my best friend is getting engaged on the same day that I've had to end the most promising relationship I've had in the last several years. But I'm happy for her. I truly am. Excuse me, I say. I'll give the two of you some privacy. They barely even hear me. They're too busy making out. I hurry off to the bathroom, my eyes heavy with moisture. No, I'm not going to cry right now. I just need a minute to pull myself together. Then I can go back out there and be super happy for my two friends. The first thing I do in the bathroom is splash some cold water on my face. Naturally, I look extremely splotchy. When I look at my reflection right now, I can't even understand why a guy like Tom would have wanted to date me. He is gorgeous, and I am maybe a step up above plain. What on earth did he ever see in me? No wonder he didn't want a commitment. If I were a supermodel, it would be a different story. I use the toilet, and when I'm done, naturally, it doesn't want to flush. There's some sort of irony in the fact that I'm in the super's apartment and the toilet doesn't work. I'm sort of reluctant to interrupt Gretchen and Randy's romantic moment to ask him to help me get the toilet to flush down my pee. Well, I don't need him. As I said to Bonnie, I know how to fix the toilet. I pull the cover off the tank. My experience is that there is a lever in there that sometimes gets stuck. The toilets in these apartments are pretty poorly made. Sure enough, the lever is stuck, and after I get it free, the toilet flushes no problem. I may not be successful in love, but at least I'm successful in fixing toilets. But then, when the water in the tank goes down, I see something else. It's a plastic bag. It's a freezer bag, the same kind of airtight bag I used to store the water bottle with Tom's fingerprints on it. Why is there a freezer bag inside their toilet tank? That's super strange. The bag seems to be taped in place. Curious, I pull it out to see why it's there. I imagine bringing it out and showing it to them. You guys are never going to believe what I found in your toilet. And then I see what's inside. And I realize that I will not be showing it to them. Not now. Not ever. Because the bag is filled with locks of long hair. At least half a dozen of them. And each one is tied together with a different color ribbon. Oh my God. Randy is the killer. Chapter 60. I stand there in the bathroom for at least 2 minutes, hyperventilating with panic. I can't believe this, and yet it makes too much sense not to be true. Randy had the key to Bonnie's apartment. Randy has no alibi. Randy is decidedly creepy. If only I had told Jake the truth. Why did I let Gretchen talk me into keeping my mouth shut? I wish I had my phone. I could call Jake and he'd drive over here with sirens blasting. He might already be outside. But I left my purse out in the living room. I can't contact him without going back out there. And the idea of going back into the living room with that man fills me with terror. But what can I do? I've already been in the bathroom way too long. At some point, Randy is going to get suspicious. And since he knows what he's got hiding in here, he'll likely do anything to protect his secret. I drop the bag of hair back in the toilet tank and replace the cover. I try not to think about the fact that one of those locks of hair belongs to Bonnie. Randy murdered her, and he stored her hair in the toilet. It's just too awful for words. And now Gretchen has agreed to be his wife. That's even more awful. I compose myself as best I can. I can't let on what I found. As I put my hand on the doorknob, a wave of dizziness comes over me. I push it away and open the door. I am going to have to put on the performance of a lifetime, at least until I can text Jake and get out of here. I just have to act natural to make sure Gretchen isn't in any danger until the cops arrive.
Hey, what happened in there? Randy asks when I come back into the living room.
They have finally stopped kissing and are cuddled together on the couch, Randy still drinking from his wine glass.
We were worried.
Does he suspect what I might have found? I attempt to laugh, although it doesn't sound like a normal human laugh. Oh well. I should probably get going. I'm sure the two of you want to celebrate together. Randy looks like he's about to agree, but then Gretchen jumps off the couch and grabs my arm. Don't be silly. I bought this cake at that amazing bakery down on 27th Street this afternoon, and I thought we could share it now. I just put it out on the table. I rub my stomach. Actually, I am so full from your delicious casserole. Is that a good enough excuse? Do I have to tell them that I have my period? Oh, come on, Sid. Her eyes are shining. This has probably been the best day of her life, and it's about to become the worst. Please stay for cake. Come on, it's my engagement night. I look over at Randy. His eyelids seem to be sagging a bit. I guess the excitement of getting engaged has been too much for him. Before I can come up with another excuse, someone bangs on the door. There's a doorbell, but this person doesn't seem at all interested in using it. They slam their fist into the door 4 times in a row.
Sydney, are you in there? Sydney!
It's Tom's voice. Crap, someone must have let him into the building. Oh no, Gretchen frowns. Why is he still bothering you? God, some men are so awful. You have no idea, Gretchen. Gretchen walks over to the door. She presses her index finger against her lips to tell me to be quiet. I glance over at Randy, who doesn't seem to be paying much attention to me, thank God. He looks like he's almost dozing off. I grab my purse off the coffee table and rifle through it to find my phone. Damn it, where's my phone? I'm sorry, Tom, Gretchen says through the door. Sydney isn't here at the moment.
Bullshit! He slams his fist against the door again. I know she's in there. Let me in. Let me in or I'll call the police.
And tell them what? Gretchen says shortly. That you're banging on my door and demanding that we let you in? We're the ones who should call the police. I had my phone in my purse. I'm sure of it. Tom texted me before I walked into this apartment, and I had it then. And after I blocked his number, I put it back in my purse. So where is it? I bend forward, trying to get a better look inside, and a wave of dizziness comes over me again. What is going on here? I only had 1 glass of wine. I look over at Randy on the sofa. His eyes have drifted shut completely. I can't believe he's sleeping through Tom banging on the door this way.
You know what I'll tell the police, Tom hisses through the door. Let me in right now. I swear to God, Daisy, you better not hurt her.
Daisy? Who is Daisy? What is he talking about?
Daisy!
He is shouting now.
Daisy, let me in right now!
Why is he calling you Daisy? I ask Gretchen. She turns away from the door, her expression thoughtful. The thing is, Sydney, she says, there are a few things about me that you don't know. And then she turns back to the door and twists the lock.
Chapter 61. Before. Tom.
Daisy? I gasp. Daisy turns away from the body on the ground, and I can see her tear-streaked face. I also see the gun in her hand. She lets it drop, then she runs in my direction, the tears flowing freely. She doesn't stop until she has propelled herself into my arms. "Tom," she sobs. "Oh, Tom, I was waiting here for you, and he came at me. He had a knife." "That bastard. He did exactly what I thought he would do." She buries her damp face in my shoulder as I cling to her.
"I almost didn't bring my father's extra gun, but I thought I might need protection out here. If I hadn't..."
If I hadn't. I can't even contemplate the end of that sentence. If she hadn't brought that gun, Daisy would be lying dead in the parking lot of the Dairy Queen right now. And I would be murdering Slug with my bare hands. "What happened?" I ask. She pulls her face away from my t-shirt. She's so beautiful, even when she's crying. Especially when she's crying.
"He was waiting for me here. He told me all this terrible stuff. He said that he killed Brandy and Allison, and that now he was going to kill me."
"Jesus," I breathe. Even though I know it's true, there's a part of me that doesn't want to believe Slug could do all that stuff. I could believe he was a peeping Tom, but until recently, I never would have believed that he was capable of killing someone, much less mutilating a bunch of girls. He loved girls. He just couldn't get them to like him back. People thought he was weird, yeah, but that's because they didn't understand him. He just thought insects were the coolest thing. He talked about wanting to be an entomologist, a bug scientist. That's never going to happen now. "Slug, why did you do it? I would have gotten you a girlfriend somehow, if you wanted one so badly."
I'd better call my father," Daisy says through her tears. "He's going to be furious with me for sneaking out, but he needs to know what happened."
"Your father?" I take a step back, ready to bolt. "Daisy, if you call your dad, he's going to snap handcuffs on me and take me to jail."
"No, he won't."
She looks affronted.
"Slug told me he killed Brandy and Allison all on his own. You didn't have anything to do with it. Don't you understand? This clears you."
"Right, but..." I rub the back of my neck. "If it's all the same to you, I'd rather get out of here. If your dad sees me here, I don't know if he's going to believe anything I say."
"I need you, Tom."
She frowns.
"You have to back up my story that Slug was trying to attack me."
"But I didn't see him try to attack you." She throws up her hands.
"So what? I mean, look at him. He was waiting for me here. He was obviously going to attack me, and he came with a knife, for God's sake."
I step over to where my best friend is lying dead in the parking lot of the Dairy Queen, bypassing the kitchen knife lying next to him. There's a puddle of crimson spreading below his body and across his chest. His lips are slightly parted, and there's a trickle of blood running out the side of his mouth. His brown eyes are open, staring at the stars. In the moonlight, you can't see his acne, and he looks a lot younger. He reminds me of the way he looked when I first sat next to him in the cafeteria, and he was so happy just to have a friend.
"He's a monster," Daisy sniffles. "He killed my best friend."
I put my arm around her again as she dissolves into fresh tears. It looks like I'm going to have to stay. But she's right. Her story absolves me of any guilt. Maybe the chief will even let me date her again. I realize I've got to tell my mother what's going on. She's also going to be furious that I left the house in the middle of the night, but it would be worse if she woke up and found my bed empty. And I have a feeling I'm going to be here for a while. I pull my phone out of my pocket. I had it on silent during the night, and I got a text message about 20 minutes ago while I was walking over here. Weirdly, it's from Slug. I read the message, my heart speeding up again.
"Hey, Daisy asked me to come meet her at the Dairy Queen. Maybe together we can convince her not to say anything."
Okay. That's strange. And then something else strange hits me.
something that had been percolating in the back of my head finally rises to the surface. When we were talking about the problem with Daisy, Slug said I should handle her the same way you handled Allison. At the time, I thought he was being sarcastic, but he didn't sound sarcastic. A terrible thought suddenly occurs to me. Slug thought I was the one who killed Allison. Now that I think about it, how could he have killed her? We were driving around most of the night, and it's not like Allison would have left her house in the middle of the night to meet Slug. There's only one person who Allison trusted, who could have lured her out of her house without a fight. It's definitely not Slug. It's not me, either. Daisy, I say, you said that Slug surprised you by showing up here? She bobs her head.
He was hiding in the shadows when I arrived.
But his car was in the parking lot. Didn't you see it? She wrinkles her pert little nose.
I didn't know that was his car.
Well, you knew it wasn't my car. So whose car did you think it was at 1 in the morning?
I don't know. A random parked car, then.
Uh-huh. I look at my best friend's body, still splayed out on the ground. And while he was getting ready to attack you, that was when he told you about all the other girls he killed? Daisy stares at me, her lips turned down.
I don't know what you're implying.
She looks over at my phone, which is still in my right hand.
What's on your phone? What's got you so worked up?
Nothing, I start to say. But before I can even finish the word, Daisy reaches out and snatches the phone right out of my hand.
Hey, give that back!
But she isn't listening. She's staring down at the screen, and even if I got my phone back, it's too late at this point. She reads the message from Slug.
Oh, I see.
She nods slowly.
You think that I set him up? That I lured him out here just so I could kill him? Is that what you think?
Well, no. Of course I don't think that. Daisy would never do something like that. Not my Daisy. She swipes at the screen on my phone, and I realize she has just deleted the text message. When the message is gone, she hands my phone back to me.
And what if I did?
I suck in a breath.
What?
Jesus, Tom.
She bends down to pick something up off the ground, and I realize the gun is back in her hand.
The two of you were pathetic. Slug gets himself caught peeping in windows. That's bad enough. But then you just let Allison walk away after she sees you putting a dead body in the trunk of your car. I snuck over to see you that night. But then I ended up seeing everything you did through the side window of your house. All your stupid decisions. I mean, do you want to spend the rest of your life in prison?
My head is spinning. I can't believe the words coming out of Daisy's mouth.
You killed Allison, I manage.
You say it like it's a bad thing.
Her clear blue eyes widen.
Tom, she was going to call the police about you. Do you know that? And believe me, she hated you. Every chance she got, she would try to convince me to dump you.
She smiles at me.
She didn't see the potential in you that I do.
It suddenly feels very hard to breathe.
What about Brandy?
You were kissing her, Tom.
Her pale eyelashes flutter.
You and I were supposed to be together. I couldn't have that. She was all wrong for you. Trust me, I did you a massive favor.
You tortured them, I gasp. That's what the news said.
I mean, a little.
She shrugs.
I had to have some fun with it, didn't I?
I suddenly realize my knees can't support me anymore. I crouch down in the middle of the parking lot, spots floating before my eyes. This can't be happening. The girl I love didn't just admit to killing 3 people. This has got to be another one of those wild dreams of mine. Any second now, I'm going to wake up covered in sweat.
Any second now.
Stop being such a drama queen, Tom.
Daisy kicks me with her sneaker.
It's not like you didn't enjoy slashing your father's throat. You think I don't know you?
I do. It's not the same. Slug didn't deserve this. Didn't he?
She sneers.
I hate to break it to you, but your friend was a pervert. He went all over town peeping in girls' windows. Guys like that don't grow up to be wonderful people. We probably just saved a couple of girls in college from getting raped. You don't know that. You didn't know, Slug.
Although, she does have a point. What kind of guy goes around town peeking in girls' windows? No matter how desperate you are, you don't do that. If I had known. Slowly, I manage to get back on my feet, although I'm still lightheaded. Daisy is holding the gun, and she's pointing it at me. There's an expression on her face that is unfamiliar, but at the same time, very familiar. I see it sometimes when I look in the mirror. I always thought that I was drawn to Daisy because she's so pretty and sweet and good, and that she brought out the better parts of me. But now, I know the truth. The reason I feel connected to Daisy is because she's exactly like me. Are you going to shoot me? I ask.
I wasn't planning to, she says. I'd say it's your call. What are you going to tell the police?
Daisy, listen to me, Tom.
She shakes the gun at me.
I'll make this really simple for you. I'm not going to jail. So either you go along with my story, and Slug takes the fall for everything, or else I kill you, and you and Slug share the blame.
Makes no difference to you, huh?
My voice cracks on the words, and Daisy's face falls. It hits me that despite all the terrible things she's done, she never faked her feelings for me.
Don't say that. I like you, Tom. I love you. And if all the murders get pinned on Slug, we can be together again. Won't that be wonderful?
Despite everything, there's a part of me that agrees with her. It would be wonderful to be with Daisy again. I had been so scared I would never get to hold her or touch her again. It felt like my life was over. Now she's giving me a second chance, giving us a second chance. She notices the expression on my face and reaches for my hand.
We could lose our virginity to each other, Tom. That would be so amazing. I've been saving myself for you, you know.
My mouth goes dry at her confession. Oh.
My point is, we could have everything. We could spend the rest of our lives together.
Her voice lowers to a sultry tone. That's what you want, isn't it? It used to be everything I wanted.
What about my father? What about him? He's a drunk. Nobody cares what happened to him.
She offers me a smile.
I will make sure my father doesn't dig too deep. Being the daughter of the chief of police has its advantages.
I don't doubt that. Even if I pretend to go along with her story for now, and then turn on her when the police arrive, nobody will believe me. Chief Driscoll would never believe that the apple of his eye is a homicidal maniac. She winks at me, which makes a chill go down my spine.
What do you say, Tom? Do we live happily ever after?
I make a decision at that moment. I will keep Daisy's secret. I won't tell a soul that she murdered two of our classmates and my best friend. I won't tell anyone that she's a psychopath. I will take her secret to my grave. I will do this to save myself. But that's not the only reason. I will keep Daisy's secret because I love her. I have always loved her, more than anyone I've ever known. And even now that I know how dangerous she is, I don't have it in me to hurt her. And she knows it. But she and I are over. She won't be my girlfriend anymore. I won't kiss her. We won't lose our virginities to each other. We won't get married or have kids or grow old together. I'll still think about her, but I'll try not to. I love Daisy, but all I want right now is to be as far away from her as possible. I won't let her ruin me. I'm better than that.
Chapter 62. Present Day. Sydney. My head is spinning. I'm not sure if it's everything that's happened recently or something else, but it feels like I can barely stand up straight. Still, I'm thinking straight enough to feel horrified when Gretchen lets Tom into the apartment. Tom's eyes widen when he gets a look at me. He glances over at Gretchen, then back to me.
Sydney, he says. Are you okay?
Before I can say a word, the dizziness overwhelms me and I sink to my knees. Even if I wanted to leave this apartment, I couldn't do it. Maybe I could crawl out.
Jesus Christ, Tom says. Daisy, what the hell did you do to her?
Why is he asking Gretchen what she did? Randy is the killer. Except when I look back at Randy, he is still out cold.
I just thought everyone needed to chill out a bit, Gretchen says. Especially her.
The wine. Oh my God, was there something in the wine I was drinking? Thank God I only had one glass. Randy must have had three. Gretchen barely touched it. Tom asks the question that's in my head.
What did you give them?
Oleander, she answers instantly. I keep a few leaves handy for emergencies.
When she sees the shocked look on Tom's face, she adds,
I didn't give them enough to kill them, but I find that when mixed with alcohol, it makes people extremely drowsy. And, as I'm sure you know, Tom, it doesn't show up on a routine autopsy.
A flush enters his cheeks as he stares at her.
I can't believe you. You promised me no more. You told me you would leave me alone after the last one, Daisy.
Why does he keep calling her Daisy? It's so strange. I look up at the two of them, standing over me while I lie on the floor wondering what the hell Oleander is and what it will do to me. At least she supposedly didn't give me enough to kill me.
Who's Daisy?
I manage to ask, even though my tongue feels like a big lump in my mouth.
That's what everyone used to call me when I was a girl, she explains. You know I love flowers. You saw my exhibit. And daisies are my favorite. But I have outgrown the nickname. Nobody calls me that anymore. Well, except Tom here.
You have a serious problem, Tom croaks. I had no idea that you were living here. Christ, was that because of Bonnie?
Gretchen's eyelashes flutter.
I had to keep an eye on things, so I joined Bonnie's little yoga class. I just wanted to meet this girl that you thought was so wonderful and worthy of your time.
Even with my foggy brain, I register what she's saying. I still remember the day Gretchen rolled out her yoga mat next to Bonnie's. She flashed a big smile.
Hi, I'm Gretchen. This is my first yoga class.
And with her sweet, open face, we both immediately liked her. Then she met Randy while coming over to visit us, and now she's living with him. Randy was her ticket in.
You need to leave me alone, he growls. I can't have a life because of you. I'm lonely as hell, but I'm too afraid to have anything more than a one-night stand, because every time I start to get serious with a girl, her life is in danger. Do you know what that's like? I can't even give out my real phone number because I don't want the cops to track me down. Do you want me to go to prison, Daisy?
You won't go to prison, she waves a hand. I always make sure it happens on a night when you have an alibi. Anyway, she glances in my direction. It doesn't seem like you're doing so bad for yourself.
Tom's face turns pink.
What do you want from me? Do I have to take a vow of celibacy? Is that what you need me to do so you'll stop killing people?
I did you a favor, she retorts. You would have been miserable with Bonnie, or any of those other utterly boring women.
I feel a surge of nausea. Somehow, I got everything wrong. I thought Randy needed Gretchen to be his fake alibi. But it turns out that Gretchen was the one who actually needed the alibi.
You know what I want, Tom? Gretchen tilts her head to look up at him, her sweet expression contrasting with the sharp tone of her voice.
I want you. That's what I've always wanted. And I know you love me too. Sydney told me that you said you never got over me. Of course, you told her I was dead, but I can forgive you for that.
Wait, that girl Tom dated when he was in high school, the one he said was the only girl he'd ever loved, that was Gretchen? I saw that flash of recognition in his face when Gretchen and Randy appeared. I had assumed he was staring at Randy, but now I realized the truth. Gretchen was the one he was shocked to recognize.
You want me so bad? He nods at her left hand. Is that really true? Because it seems like you just got engaged to another man.
Oh, him? Her lips curl in disgust.
Don't be silly, Tom. I don't even like him.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's true. I loathe him, Tom.
You loathe him? I find that very hard to believe.
Well, believe it. She glances back at Randy. And I can prove it to you.
The next thing that happens occurs so fast that neither Tom nor I could possibly stop it. Gretchen picks up the knife she had placed down by the cake box. She crosses the room, and I watch in horror as she plunges the blade of the knife into Randy's belly. He was out cold, but for a split second his eyes fly open. Then she stabs him a second time, and then a third. And this time blood spurts out of his mouth and his eyes drift shut again. Tom seems to be frozen in horror, watching what she's doing.
Daisy!
Tom finally yells, snapping out of his trance, but it's far too late.
What the hell do you think you're doing? Jesus Christ!
She shrugs and finally lowers her hand holding the bloody knife.
I told you I don't love him. Now you don't have to be jealous.
Tom takes a shaky breath, raking both his hands through his hair.
This is nuts. You just killed an innocent man.
Innocent?
Gretchen sneers.
You know what he used to do? He used to use his keys to go into female tenants' apartments while they were at work and go through their underwear drawers and rub his face all over their panties. Believe me, this wasn't a big loss to society.
Is that true? Did Randy really do that? Despite everything, I believe her. Bonnie always thought Randy was creepy, and she wasn't wrong. But he didn't deserve to die. Tom has started pacing the room, looking thoroughly freaked out. Daisy watches him, her eyes twinkling.
Oh, relax, she says. I didn't kill him because of you. I was always going to do it. I taped a bunch of locks of hair in the tank of the toilet, and Randy here is going to take the fall for all those girls who were killed, including dear Bonnie.
She flashes me a pointed look.
Poor Sydney here will be his last victim before I come in and stab him in self-defense.
Last victim? Does that mean... Oh my God, she's really going to kill me. This woman is a total psychopath, and she isn't about to leave behind any witnesses. I had no idea Gretchen had it in her.
Tom stops pacing and turns to face her. You need help, Daisy. I mean it. Let's go to the police together. I'll explain everything to them. Please.
Gretchen shoots him a dirty look.
Don't act so holier than thou, Tom. You pretend like you're in love with Sydney, but does she know why you really like her?
He shakes his head, his mouth hanging open.
Daisy.
Does she know how you love to watch her bleed?
A smile creeps across her lips.
When she told me that story about how you asked her out after an epic nosebleed, I was like, yes, Tom hasn't changed a bit.
The color drains from Tom's face.
Daisy, don't say that.
Why not? Don't lie about who you are.
Oh my God, is that true? Maybe it is. He always seemed fascinated by how easily I bleed. Our first date was after a nosebleed. The first time we made passionate love was when I sliced my finger cutting up a lime. Gretchen claims Tom is just like she is, and I'm beginning to worry she's right. My fatigue is almost overwhelming, but at the same time, adrenaline is keeping me awake. These two are both out of their minds. I've got to figure out a way out of this apartment before I end up like Randy. But how?
I know how much it turns you on when she bleeds, Gretchen says. You're too much of a wuss to cut into her yourself, but I can do it.
She reaches out to touch his arm, and to my dismay, he doesn't pull away.
I can help you with that. We can watch her bleed together. We'll have so much fun together.
Tom doesn't tell her no. In fact, he can't seem to tear his gaze away from her. I remember how he talked about that girl he loved back in high school. This is the girl. This is the only girl he ever loved. The one he can never get over.
I love you, Tom, she murmurs. And I know you love me too. You're the only man I have ever loved or will ever love. We are so much alike.
He shakes his head, almost imperceptibly.
Don't say no.
She takes his hand in hers.
You love me. You'll never be happy without me.
That's not true.
You and I are meant to be together, she insists. And you know it.
Chapter 63. Before. Tom. I've got my arm around Cindy's shoulders as we walk out of the theater where we just watched Blood Lake 2, and I'm holding her close to me to stave off the February chill. The night is frigid, but clear enough to see the moon above us, and it's so peaceful. I'd love to just enjoy a quiet walk home with my girlfriend, but Cindy's mind is only on one thing.
That was hands down the most disgusting movie I've ever seen, Cindy rants. She can't seem to shut up about it. Seriously, Tom, I thought I was going to lose my lunch.
Uh-huh.
That scene where the killer slices open Kay's stomach and her intestines fly out everywhere?
Her whole body shudders.
That might have been one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. I'm going to have nightmares over that for weeks. Weeks, Tom.
Yeah, I mumble. She tilts her heart-shaped face up to look at me accusingly, the edge of her white puffball hat nearly concealing her eyes.
How could you take me to that awful movie? I thought you saw the first one. Didn't you realize how awful it was?
Sorry. The first one was different. I don't tell her that the only thing that disappointed me about Blood Lake 2 is that it wasn't nearly as gory as the first Blood Lake movie. But it made up for it with phenomenal special effects. It looked as real as any of the patients I cut into during my surgery rotations in medical school. She smacks me in the arm, but it's playful. We've been dating 8 months, and it's starting to get serious. I just turned 26. So far, there's only been one girl I've ever been in love with, and it's not Cindy. But that girl was a freaking psychopath. And Cindy is nice. There's potential here. I could imagine settling down with a girl like Cindy, getting married, having kids, maybe a dog.
I suppose I can forgive you, Cindy finally says thoughtfully. After all, you're going to be a surgeon, so that sort of thing doesn't bother you as much.
Actually, I say, I decided not to apply for a surgery residency. She stops walking so abruptly that she nearly stumbles.
Seriously? But it's all you ever talk about.
She's right. Becoming a surgeon has been my dream ever since I can remember. But when I got into the operating room and was staring down into the chest cavity of a fellow human being as it filled with warm, pulsating blood, it became painfully clear that it wasn't the right career path for me. I finalized my residency applications last night, and even though it nearly killed me, I applied to only pathology programs, where my only patients will already be dead. It was for the best. And anyway, it's done. I changed my mind. is all I can come up with by way of explanation. She cocks her head to the side.
You are quite the mystery, Tom Brewer.
I walk Cindy the rest of the way to her apartment building as she continues to rant about Blood Lake 2. More and more often, I've been spending the night at her place. But tonight, I don't really feel like it. So I don't ask to come up, and she doesn't offer. I walk home by myself. It's a 30-minute walk, and it's below freezing. But I've got a warm coat and a beanie, and somehow I barely feel the cold. I'm the only one on the street. And my mother would probably be furious with me if she knew how often I walk around Philadelphia alone at night. But I like to be alone. There's no one I've really managed to connect with out here. Making friends has always been hard for me, and that hasn't changed. I buried the only close friend I ever had back in high school. Anyway, I'm fine on my own. I worry about my mother much more than she worries about me. She hasn't remarried or even dated, as far as I know, since my father disappeared. The investigation into his disappearance was shockingly minimal. As it turned out, my dad had been racking up debts all over town, and he'd gotten on the bad side of a few dangerous people, so everyone figured he took off to escape having his kneecaps broken. It didn't hurt matters that the daughter of our town's police chief was on my side, telling her daddy how I helped save her life. But my mother knows who was responsible for what happened to him. We've never discussed it, but I see it in her eyes every time I visit her. When I told her I'd decided against becoming a surgeon, she said, "Thank God." When I get back to my apartment, a small one-bedroom that's a short drive from the med school campus, I yank off my hat and coat, then make a beeline for my laptop on the futon in the living room. I couldn't enjoy the movie while Cindy was sitting next to me, shooting me disgusted looks the whole time, but I bet I can find some of the better scenes online. I'd rather watch them alone. What was I thinking when I brought Cindy to that movie? Maybe I had to hope she'd... Well, never mind. That was stupid. I place my laptop on my thighs, but when I get my hands on the keyboard, I don't search for Blood Lake 2 videos. Instead, I do something that I find myself doing just a bit too often lately. I load up Facebook and search for Daisy Driscoll's page. Of course, she calls herself Gretchen now, but I'll never be able to think of her that way. We're not Facebook friends, but I know from previous experience that her profile is public. I scroll through her feed, pausing at a selfie she took of herself a few days ago. I used to know that face so well. I used to smile every time I saw it. And then I catch a glimpse of a movie marquee captured in the background of the selfie. Blood Lake 2. I wonder if she went to see it. And if so, did she go alone? After all, no one knows she enjoys movies in which characters get their faces ripped off by disembodied hands emerging from the lake. Nobody knows the real Daisy Driscoll. Only me. I close my eyes. For a second, I allow myself to imagine an alternate universe where Daisy and I can see Blood Lake 2 together. And then, after it's over, we can go back to her place and make passionate love. For hours. I whip out my phone and bring up my address book. This is the third phone I've had since high school, and it's got Daisy's number programmed into it, even though I've been careful to avoid her since graduation. I don't know why I keep transferring her number into my new phones. I should delete it. Block her. But I never do. Impulsively, I click on Daisy's name and start a new text message. After a moment of thought, I tap out a message. "Hey, how are you doing?" I stare at the words. Wow, that sounds so lame. Daisy and I haven't spoken in 8 years. Well, except for that one time in college when I was dating that girl who drowned over the summer and she came to the funeral. Daisy probably barely remembers me, and I'd seem like such a loser if I sent her a random text like that on a Saturday night. It's not even what I really want to say. I delete the text before I can do something dumb, like hitting send. I chew on my lower lip, and then, before I can stop myself, I type a second message to Daisy. I miss you. Christ, that's even worse. If I send that, she's gonna think I'm drunk and looking for a booty call. I delete it and nearly toss my phone aside, but I can't stop staring at Daisy's name at the top of the screen. You know you've got it bad when even looking at a girl's name makes your heart skip a beat. And now I find myself typing the words that have been running through my head all night and for the last 8 years. I don't think I can live without you, Daisy. No. No. I can't say that, for God's sake. I can't say anything to Daisy Driscoll. It'd just be asking for trouble. No, it's better to focus on Cindy, who is sweet and pretty and doesn't like horror movies, just like any normal girl. And I like Cindy. I really do. Okay, I'm not in love with her, but I could be. I will be. I delete the message to Daisy. Then I bring up Cindy's name in my contacts. I'll call her. And if I take my car, I can be over at her place in 5 minutes. She'll help me forget all about Daisy, I bet. I click on Cindy's name, and I feel only a slight twinge of regret when it rings on the other end of the line. I brace myself for Cindy's high voice, but to my surprise, she doesn't pick up. The phone rings and rings, then finally goes to voicemail. Huh. That's weird. I only dropped her off less than an hour ago, and it's not close to bedtime yet. Why isn't she picking up her phone? Cindy always answers her phone. Where could she have gone? But I'm sure she's fine. After all, what could have happened?
Chapter 64. Present Day. Sydney. I've got to get out of here. Gretchen intends to kill me. That much is clear. And Tom has mixed feelings at best. And even if he wants to save me, I'm not sure he can. Gretchen means business, and he doesn't seem to have it in him to stop her. But what can I do? I have no idea what the combination of oleander and alcohol does to a person, but I can barely move. I make an attempt to sit up, but a wave of nausea comes over me, and it's all I can do to keep from vomiting all over the floor. You're not going to get away with this, Tom says to Gretchen. The police are going to figure out what you did. They're not going to believe Randy was attacking you when he's lying dead on the sofa.
So I'll move him, she says impatiently.
You know, he grunts, we can tell on the autopsy if a body has been moved after death.
Can you? Her eyes light up. How?
It has to do with lividity, he explains. That's the bluish-purple discoloration that occurs on the skin after death, and gravity is what causes it to pool in different locations.
She nods, fascinated. And how long does that take to set in?
Well, Tom begins.
Oh my God, are the two of them really standing there geeking out about the decomposition of dead bodies while Randy is lying dead a few feet away and I'm clinging to consciousness on the floor? Is this really happening? But no, this is good. They're so intent on each other that they're hardly paying attention to me anymore. This is my chance to get out of here. I take a deep breath, pushing away another wave of nausea. I don't have to do much. All I have to do is get to my feet and make a run for the door that is less than 10 feet away. Thank God Manhattan apartments are so tiny. I summon all my strength, trying to get to my feet. But right away, my arms and legs start to tremble. I can't do it. The oleander Daisy drugged me with has hit me too hard. Could I crawl? It isn't that far. Except if I do that, how will I reach the lock on the door? Oh God, this is impossible. I'm going to die here. As soon as Tom finishes teaching Gretchen about liver mortis, she's going to use that knife to stab me to death. Then she'll store my hair in the toilet tank. I don't want it to end this way. I loved Bonnie, but I don't want to end up like her. I want to live. And Jake will never, ever forgive himself if I die here tonight. But what can I do?
Just when I'm weighing my limited options, I hear a noise from outside. The noise is growing increasingly loud, and it takes my drugged brain several seconds to identify it. Police sirens. Gretchen's eyes fly wide open.
What the hell? Sydney, you called the cops? But how? I took your phone.
Oh, that's why my phone wasn't in my purse. Sydney didn't call the police, Tom says. I did.
Gretchen yanks her hand away from him like she's been stung. What?
His expression is grim. I did it before I knocked on the door. I told them everything. I'm sorry, Daisy.
Tom, how could you?
She bursts out, her face pink. I've known Gretchen for a year, but I have never seen her this emotional before.
After everything we've been through, how could you do that to me?
He just shakes his head. Gretchen steps over to the window, careful to stay out of clean sight.
Shit,
she mutters under her breath. I'm so sorry, Daisy. His voice breaks on the words. I had to do it. I couldn't let you, you know. She stands there for a moment, holding the knife in one hand, the other balled into a fist.
There's another way out of here. Randy showed it to me. It's like a secret back exit through the laundry room. I can get out through there.
She looks up at him.
We can get out.
Daisy.
Tom, come with me.
She steps closer to him, her eyes shining with excitement and determination.
Come on. You know we've both been miserable alone for the last 20 years. This is our chance to actually be happy.
She takes his hand again.
I want to spend the rest of my life with you. I want to have a family with you.
A family? Daisy.
It won't happen with anyone else but me, she says. And you know it. There is nobody else who could possibly understand you the way I do. With anyone else, your life would be a lie.
He shakes his head again, but with less conviction than I would have hoped. Daisy.
Please.
Her eyes spill over with tears.
We've been apart for 20 years, and it's sucked. I'm sick of living that way, aren't you?
What are you asking me? He frowns at her. You really want me to give up my entire life to be with you? She's quiet for a few beats.
Well,
she says.
Yes.
Daisy. She stares up at him with shining eyes.
I can't live without you, Tom.
At first, I'm certain he's going to tell her to go to hell. He's got a life here, a career as a medical examiner. He wouldn't give that all up to go on the run with some psychopath who has already murdered God knows how many people. But then I see the way he's looking at her, and I realize what his answer is going to be. I can't live without you either, he says softly. In the distance, the sirens are growing louder. Tom swears under his breath. We have to go, he says. Quickly. Gretchen's face lights up. I thought she'd looked happy when Randy asked her to marry him, but I now realize that was fake happiness. I have never truly seen Gretchen happy until this moment.
Great. Let me just get rid of our little witness here.
She means me. Gretchen's knife is glinting in the overhead light, and it's very clear what she means to do. She's going to get rid of me the same way she got rid of Randy. And when the police arrive, they're going to find two dead bodies in this apartment. I'm too weak to get out of here. I've been trying, but I can't even crawl, much less make a run for the door. I'm completely at her mercy. This is it. The end. I'm going to end up like Bonnie after all. In a casket, buried in the ground for all eternity. Jake will probably be the one to find my body, and it will wreck him. Don't blame yourself, Jake. Nobody could have seen this coming. But just as I'm bracing myself for the inevitable, Tom reaches out to grab Gretchen's wrist. If you touch Sydney, I'm not going with you. Do you understand me?
But she knows everything,
she pouts. His voice is stern. You don't hurt Sydney, okay? If I go with you, this needs to stop. The killing needs to stop.
Gretchen looks down at me with unadulterated disgust on her face. I can't believe I thought this woman was my best friend. She really had me fooled. She is truly diabolical.
Good luck, Tom.
You don't really mean that, she sneers.
I do.
His gaze is unblinking.
No more. That's my condition if I go with you. Nobody else dies, Daisy.
She tilts her head to the side, considering this.
Even if they deserve it?
Well, he says after a pause. That's different, of course.
His answer sends a shiver down my spine. But his ultimatum works. Gretchen tosses the knife on the coffee table, and then the two of them run out the front door together. It slams shut, the sound echoing through the small apartment. And it's only when the police start banging on the door a few minutes later that I finally allow myself to pass out. Epilogue. 1 month later. Sydney. I'm juggling two bags of groceries as I unlock the door to my building, and that's when my phone rings. It's been a month since Gretchen Driscoll and Tom Brewer vanished off the face of the planet. Or at least, that's how it seems. I woke up in the hospital a few hours after the police showed up at my building, still groggy, but incredibly grateful to be alive. When my nurse saw that I was awake, she said to me, "There's a detective who asked me to call him immediately when you woke up." That was Jake, of course. Even though there was a manhunt in progress, he dropped everything to race over to the hospital to see me. After all this time, several years too late, he had truly figured out how to make time for me. And it's his name flashing on the screen of my phone right now. I manage to get inside the door, where a blast of heat greets me. I dump my groceries on the floor of the mailroom before taking Jake's call.
"Hey, Sid,"
he says.
"Hey. You have plans tonight?"
He knows I don't have plans. After Tom and Gretchen escaped through the back entrance, the entire police force launched a full-scale manhunt. After all, the strands of hair in Gretchen's toilet linked her to multiple murders, not to mention that of Randall Muncy. The police were desperate to find them, but both of them abandoned their entire lives and vanished into nothingness together. Jake was only a small part of this manhunt, which eventually included the FBI, but he took on a much more reasonable task. He appointed himself my official bodyguard, in case they come back. When he told me that, I challenged him. Not that I didn't want him around, but I reminded him about his busy schedule. He brushed off my concerns. "I'm going to make time for what's important." And he has. He really has. "I don't have plans," I say as I settle down onto the bench in the mailroom. My frozen TV dinners are all melting, but that's okay. Jake has been bringing in dinner most nights anyway.
"Excellent,"
Jake says.
"I was thinking that while I'm keeping watch over you tonight, I could bring over some burgers and fries. What do you think?"
Although nothing has happened between us over the last month, we've spent every evening together. I'd forgotten how much I enjoyed his company. A smile twitches at my lips. "You know," I say, "it's been an entire month. Gretchen and Tom are almost certainly long gone. I don't know if you need to protect me quite so intently anymore. I do have my deadbolt."
"Well, you know, better safe than sorry."
"I'm just not sure it's necessary."
"Oh."
Jake is quiet for a moment.
"I don't have to do it anymore if you don't want me to. I don't want to bother you, Sid. If you don't want me keeping an eye on you anymore, I don't have to do it."
"I don't," I say.
"Right."
He can't mask the disappointment in his voice.
"Okay, no problem. I'll leave you alone then."
"But," I shift my phone to my other ear. "If you would like to come over tonight with burgers and fries and spend time with me, That would be okay. In fact, I would like that very much. I can almost hear him smiling on the other end of the line.
I'd like that too.
I'm giving Jake another chance. He desperately wants it, and I want it too. If there's one good thing to come out of all this, it's our realizing what we lost when our relationship ended. But it's not too late to give it another try. After all, if Tom and Gretchen can be happy together, why not me and Jake? Plus, my mother will be thrilled. Hopefully, I'll be able to give her a grandchild a little before I'm 90. Jake promises to be over at 7, and I hang up the phone with a smile on my face. I can't wait to see him. Tom never had any chance of being the one, but I'm pretty sure Jake might be it. I grab my keys again and open my mailbox. There is the usual mix of bills, letters from my college alumni association asking for money, 2 catalogs advertising a variety of chocolates, and 1 offering lingerie. And there's 1 other piece of mail that is a little more unexpected, a white envelope with my name on it, but no return address. That's strange. My name and address are handwritten. The black ink is big and loopy, with all the letters in capitals. I stare at it for a moment, my heart fluttering. I wonder if I should call Jake back and ask him if it's safe to open this mystery letter. But if I do call him, I'm sure he'll make too much of it. He'd probably have a SWAT team here within the hour. So I rip open the envelope, and I let out a gasp. Inside the envelope is a lock of scraggly, dirty blonde hair. Even though I should probably be careful touching anything from this envelope, I can't help but pull it out. From the length of the hair, it looks like it would have fallen just below the shoulders of the owner, and it is tied together with a red ribbon. What is this? And why was this sent to me? Maybe I still do need Jake looking out for me. As I'm trying not to panic, a small ripped piece of paper flutters out of the envelope. It falls to the ground, face down. Before I can stop myself, I grab the piece of paper. The writing on it is identical to that on the envelope. I sink back down onto the bench as I read the words that the sender has written.
Sydney, Kevin won't be bothering you ever again. Tom.
I stare down at the note that Tom wrote to me about the man who had attacked and stalked me for months. I had assumed that he and Gretchen were halfway across the globe by now, but maybe not. I can't help but remember the last words the two of them exchanged before they took off.
Nobody else dies, Daisy.
Even if they deserve it?
Well, that's different, of course.
Apparently, Tom thought Kevin deserved it. I frowned down at the note. I should save this to show Jake. I should definitely save this. Even after everything Kevin did to me, did he really deserve to die? There should be justice for his murder, just like anyone else's. Right? I sit on the bench, staring at the note for much too long. Finally, I slip it and the hair back in the envelope, doing my best to seal it closed once again. And then I toss it in the trash before heading upstairs to my apartment to get ready for dinner. The end. This has been The Boyfriend, written by Freda McFadden, performed by Adam Blandford and Victoria Connolly. Copyright 2024 by Freda McFadden. Production copyright Freda McFadden. Production coordination.